Welcome. I'm Wendy Winterstein. I serve as the Dean of the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Iowa State University and the Director of the Experiment Station. Thank you for joining us today for a roundtable on the important issue of immigration reform hosted by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I'm happy to welcome you here to Iowa State University's MBA classroom for today's discussion. It really is a marvelous facility, and if you have a chance to see the other classroom, I encourage you to take a minute. Well, it's always a pleasure to welcome Secretary Vilsack back to Iowa. He knows and understands the state so well, having served as two terms as governor and also as a state legislator and as the mayor of Mount Pleasant. Tom Vilsack is our 30th Secretary of Agriculture. He is committed to strengthening our nation's agriculture economy. He believes in the tremendous potential and innovation of rural America. The Secretary chairs the White House Rural Council, which aims to strengthen services for rural businesses and entrepreneurs by finding new ways to partner with federal agencies and the private sector. He has focused USDA on promoting American agriculture through cutting-edge research and by improving markets here and abroad. And Iowa, of course, is always at the top or near the top as we look at the nation's agricultural exports. And the Secretary works hard to expand those opportunities for our farmers here in Iowa and throughout the United States. Secretary Vilsack believes in inspiring young people to become great scientists or humanitarian leaders. Earlier this year, he was in Des Moines to announce the establishment of USDA's Wallace Carver Fellowship in partnership with the World Food Prize Foundation. This special fellowship is named after two of Iowa State University's most influential agricultural alumni, Henry Wallace and George Washington Carver. The fellowship will help train and educate the next generation of agricultural leaders. Please help me welcome Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack.
Well, Dean, thank you very much. It's great to be back home. And it's certainly want to express my appreciation to Iowa State University, not only for allowing us this opportunity in this forum this morning, but also for the great work that you all are doing at Iowa State to advance American agriculture in all aspects. I do want to also acknowledge three other panel members that will be assisting us today. Helen Adams is with Pioneer, and so it was appropriate to mention Henry Wallace in the context of this meeting. I appreciate Helen's involvement. She'll be speaking later. Rob Wunderlich is a farmer, dairy farmer, who I think has a very personal and very specific understanding of the challenge of immigration and immigration reform and the impact and effect it has on individual producers. And Jay Byers, who is obviously associated with the Greater Des Moines Partnership, I think he brings an understanding of the business perspective to this issue of immigration reform. This week we've been very fortunate at USDA to make two fairly significant announcements about the state of American agriculture. One was net farm income, and we reported today the expectation that 2013 will be a record year in net farm income. We also had an opportunity to revise our export numbers in terms of agricultural exports, and again reporting a record amount of agricultural exports expected this year. Now, that's obviously positive news for producers and for people who are associated and connected to agricultural trade. But there are some serious challenges to the future of American agriculture, and two of those challenges require congressional action. One is the important role that a five-year farm bill will play in providing certainty about farm policy in the future. And while we're not here today to talk specifically about the farm bill, it is critically important for Congress to take action when they return from their August recess in getting this farm bill done to avoid some adverse consequences to our trade situation and also to avoid the implementation of permanent agricultural law, which could potentially be very disruptive to markets. A second issue, which is often not thought of in terms of agriculture, is the issue of immigration. What most Americans may not fully understand is that agriculture depends to a great extent on immigrant labor. We have about 1.1 million people who are employed in agricultural activities of one kind or another. And the sad reality in America today is that there are farmers throughout the United States that are now making decisions not to harvest what they planted because they simply do not have enough hands to conduct the harvest. There are producers who are making decisions today not to expand or to contract their operations because they are not convinced they will have a stable and secure workforce. And there are indeed some producers, large-scale producers, in parts of this country that are now making the conscious decision to move agricultural production outside of the United States to other countries because they are just not convinced that there will be a stable and secure workforce. Now, this is a sad reality. American agriculture has extraordinary upside potential, but we aren't going to be able to realize it unless we can assure producers and growers and farmers and ranchers that we will have adequate workforce. We can get that adequate workforce. The Senate has passed a comprehensive immigration reform bill. It focuses on maintaining and enhancing border security, with making an historic investment in that border security. It also provides a recognition and understanding that there are people in this country who have been here for a considerable period of time that entered this country without proper authority or proper documentation. But they have been here, they have worked here, and they are interested in being part of the American experience. We need to bring those people out of the shadows. We need them to be productive and part of that stable workforce, and particularly in agriculture. And so the bill provides, after securing the border, that we also provide a pathway to earned citizenship for those who have been here for a considerable period of time. I emphasize the word earned, because I think sometimes during this debate there is a tendency to think that allowing folks that opportunity constitutes or equates to amnesty. That is not the case here. Certainly in agriculture and agricultural workers, these individuals who will be entitled to earned citizenship must first of all acknowledge wrongdoing by the payment of a penalty or fine. They'll have to pay back taxes. They'll have to learn the language. And they're not going to be able to get to the head of the line for citizenship. They'll have to be at the back of the line, not in front of anyone who's legitimately here. It will take a long period of time for those folks to earn citizenship. But as they do, they will be legitimately here. They'll be brought out of the shadows. They'll be given an opportunity to work, to pay their fair share of taxes, and to contribute to the American way of life. This will have not just a positive impact on agriculture. It won't just simply allow producers the certainty of a workforce. It will also grow the economy. There is no question. Economist after economist has indicated that when you have comprehensive immigration reform and a workable immigration system, the economy grows. And some estimates have it as high as 3.3% growth. What that means is that over a period of 20 years, our deficit will be reduced by $850 billion. That deficit reduction is going to take place without a single person paying one dime more in tax or any person having to sacrifice any of the services that they depend on. You know, we're going to have a conversation and discussion and debate in this country about that deficit, and it's going to center around revenues, and it's going to center around cuts in programs. This is $850 billion of deficit reduction without any taxes being raised or services being cut. That's the benefit of comprehensive immigration reform. In addition, because these folks are coming out of the shadows, they're going to be participating in a workforce legitimately. They're also going to be contributing to a Social Security system that will strengthen that system. The Social Security Administration believes that the system will receive an additional $300 million in contributions, which will extend the life of that Social Security system. And finally, comprehensive immigration reform assures that there's an appropriate framework for working conditions and wages for those who work in agriculture that provides producers and workers certainty. That's the reason why there's an unusual and, I think, historic coalition that is in favor of and supporting comprehensive immigration reform. This isn't just a business idea. This isn't just an agricultural producer idea. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has joined with the AFL-CIO and the Change to Win coalition to collaboratively and jointly and coordinate in a coordinated fashion support comprehensive immigration reform, business and labor combined. Evangelical ministers, very conservative faith-based leaders, are aligned with very liberal, progressive faith-based leaders with the same message, that there's a moral responsibility to embrace comprehensive immigration reform. And in agriculture, it is agribusiness combined and linked to the Farm Workers Union, working together, reaching a consensus on how it ought to operate in agriculture. And it reflects and understands the important role that the United States Department of Agriculture can play in all of this as a federal agency that has a good deal of credibility in the countryside. We will help ensure that it is properly administered and that we will have a good opportunity to know who's coming and who's going. And if the stable and secure workforce that we create through earned citizenship is not enough, we'll have a workable guest worker system that can complement that stable workforce and assure that at all times we have the right number of people in this country, not too many or too few, with a proper workplace and wage framework that provides predictability and stability. This is an extraordinarily important thing for American agriculture, and it's something that folks may find unique and different. They may not think of immigration in the form and in the context of farmers and ranchers, but it is very important, and I think you'll hear today why it's important. There are other aspects of this bill that deal with science and technology and the need for innovation and entrepreneurship. It's interesting that immigrants are twice as likely to start a new business as those who are born and raised in the United States. And so we're going to obviously need our universities engaged and our large corporations and businesses engaged who need that innovation and entrepreneurship, that pipeline to be refurbished. It's about small business. It's about low-wage and high-wage opportunities, all of which need comprehensive immigration reform. So we've put this panel together to give you a sense, a brief understanding of the opportunities for a university, for a agribusiness, a large-scale agribusiness, a producer, and small business, to give you a sense to complement my comments about agriculture. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the dean for just a few minutes. And then she'll be followed by Helen Adams, and she will be followed by Rob, and then Jay will be the cleanup hitter. Dean, thank you.
Again, it's a pleasure to be here. I just returned from Uganda, where this summer, for 6 weeks, we had 20 Iowa State University students there working to teach agriculture in primary and secondary schools. They did that work with 20 students from Uganda's famous university, Makerere University. So truly, they had a cross-cultural experience about agriculture and rural development and what needs to be done in one of the most critical areas of the world, and that is Africa. What that story is about one of recognizing that universities play a role in helping our students understand that we do live in a global economy and that we are all responsible. When our students come back from that experience, their lives have truly been changed. And they want to have the opportunity to interact with a diverse set of students at Iowa State University. And every year, we increase that opportunity that Iowans who come to study at Iowa State University have to have that global experience. So over the last 5 years, the number of international students studying at Iowa State University has increased 56%. It's a tremendous increase in terms of numbers, both for undergraduate and graduate students. This increase in the number of students studying with us, again, provides a diversity of experiences for our students. In addition to those international students, in last fall, we had 3,510 international students with us. Every year, we have about 800 international visiting scholars. So those scholars are engaged in the classroom, they're engaged in research, they're engaged in learning about the United States. So it is an environment that gives our students the ability to be successful as they graduate and go out into the world. But it also gives Iowa an opportunity to retain some of the brightest, most creative, and innovative students that study with us. And so when we look at our students and what they do after graduation, we see a phenomenal number of graduate students that stay in the United States post-graduation. It's slightly over 98% of those graduate students stay in some capacity. We can't tell you the data on how long they stay, but we do know that their first step out of Iowa State University is here in the United States. In addition, about half of our undergraduate students that graduate stay as well in the United States for some occupation, some opportunity. So again, retaining the brightest students, especially in the fields of agriculture, which are about science, technology, engineering, and math, that's the real opportunity for the United States. It's also this friendship that we build internationally, but it's also this opportunity. So I just shared with you that I came back from Uganda, and every year we have a few of those Ugandan students have the opportunity through funding by scientists here at Iowa State to come and study with us. And there was a young lady, Maureen, I won't try to say her last name, and Maureen is working on her master's degree with Dr. Gail Nonicki, and she's looking at diseases of tomatoes. So we toured her research plots that look just like the research plots on the ISU research farms, looking at how to control the very difficult diseases on tomatoes in Uganda. But what was wonderful about the experience is that Maureen told us that she was going to get her master's degree, come back, and help Uganda really see its potential in tomato production, and that she was going to be part of the economy of Uganda. So it goes both ways. We have the opportunity to retain these extraordinary scientists and students, but we also see the students that see that they want to go back home and make a difference. Maureen will make a difference in what happens in tomato production in Uganda. And being an entrepreneur in Uganda is just as important as being one in the United States. She will change the opportunities for a whole set of students and families and farmers in Uganda. So again, whether you're an undergraduate student in agriculture or a graduate student, whether you decide to stay in the United States or go back home eventually, the potential that you bring to the global economy as it relates to the very broad definition of agriculture is what we all desperately need. So we need to find those opportunities in whatever direction those students decide to go. The one concern that we have at Iowa State University is the lengthy process that it takes for our young faculty that we hire from another country, because they were the best and brightest and competed in a search for that position, the difficulty they have in the long time it takes for them to get their green card. And earlier this year, we responded to a request from USDA NIFAS program to help us understand how difficult it was for our young faculty to proceed through the processes. And what I want to share with you is what we shared back then, and that is the logjam that occurs. So right now, immigration is just now accepting adjustment of status applications from our junior faculty members born in China, whose immigrant petitions were approved in February of 2008. So 5 years later. And so in that time period, there's doubt, there's concern, there's other paperwork that has to be maintained and updated. The waiting line for Indian-born applicants in non-faculty positions, which would primarily be our IT technology, which is a critical need, at least for Iowa State University, is backed up to November of 2002. So what can we do to streamline the processes, to see the opportunity for where the best opportunity for the United States is to retain these individuals in these fields of science, technology, engineering, math, all of which make up what we do in agriculture? So thank you, Secretary, for the opportunity to be a part of this roundtable today.